Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Bigfoot and Company, another installment in the most exciting Bigfoot journey on the internet. This is Dr. John, so glad to be with everybody. I am here in the beautiful Sun Fun capital of the world, Myrtle Beach, where it's about 78 degrees sunny, not a cloud in the sky. And people are banging on the boardwalk. They really are. I was out there with Cody, my partner in Carolina Caricatures, and it was just busy, busy. So we're having a great day out there in Myrtle Beach, and wanted to greet our co-host and guest, Matthew Delf. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, doing great. It's raining here. It's still warm, but it's rainy. But I can handle it as long as it's warm.
Okay, well, that's good. Anything exciting going on with you, Bigfoot-wise?
Well, I just went on a expedition or slash investigation this past weekend, and pretty interesting area. There's been a lot of sightings in that area, and I had looked around. There was a sighting close to there just a couple weeks ago, and I was getting some info on it, and then I went and talked to these one people, and this little girl, she was probably, I don't know, probably about 14, and she told me where her and her dad seen the track just within like 2 weeks ago, and I went and checked out that area this weekend, and didn't find any tracks because it had rained the Thursday and Friday before I went out there, but it's got a lot of promise in that area, especially, I mean, lots of wildlife. It's found elk tracks. Beavers have been very active in the area, just loaded down with wildlife, and I had a good feeling about it. So next few weeks and up into this summer, I'll be doing a lot of research in that area, especially with all the sightings that they've had in that area, very close. So there's something going on there.
Yeah, just quick question. Is it, by state, is it Kentucky, Tennessee, or Virginia?
It's right over. It goes into it's the Virginia, Kentucky area that they go into. It'll cover both of those.
Well, if I don't hear from you in a couple of days, I'll know where to come look. Okay.
Yeah,
well, that's
go.
Good. All right. Well, you'll have a good one on that, and that's great. It's good to have you here with us. Today, we've got a guest, someone that we know well, who's been at conferences with us. It is Daniel Hurst of M&D Paranormal. How are you doing today, Mr. Daniel?
I am doing well up here in soggy Asheville, North Carolina. Hope you guys are. It's good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
You are welcome. I'll tell you how this all happened. I got the great news that the Georgia Bigfoot Conference is now sold out. I'm letting just a couple more people buy tickets on the off chance that a few people don't show up, but it's sold out. And I know that, Daniel, you and M&D Paranormal are going to be looking to do a ghost hunt on Saturday night. And now the location has not yet been determined. Because the Rabun County Public Library, Stephanie and her crew are working very hard to help us find a really, really good location. And thanks, I can't say enough great things about the Rabun County Public Library and the Rabun County Civic Center. Those folks are helping make this thing possible, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It really is. And then on Sunday, Matthew Delf is going to be leading an expedition into the borderlands between Georgia and North Carolina, hopefully down Highway 441, and see if they can go find Bigfoot. Now, those tickets are available on the website, Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and they also include breakfast. And that will be held at the Rabun County Public Library. So we'll get to chow down, listen to Matt tell us what we better and better not do, and then we're going to head to the hills for sure and see if we can find Bigfoot. Who knows? We either will or will not, but I think we've always got a good chance when Matt's there with us. So anyway, we're very fortunate to have two real and experienced paranormal hunters. I will put you under that umbrella category. And so since you're both going to be speaking at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference and leading groups, I wanted to find out, number one, I'm going to ask our guest Daniel to talk about it. And the two questions are this. Number one, what should people expect when they go out with you to go ghost hunting? Number two, tell us a story or two about some of your most successful ghost hunts. We always like to hear about those. And then, Matt, after Daniel finishes, I'm going to ask you the same two questions. That should give us plenty to talk about and a lot of interesting things. So, I mean, I want to find out, too, because I'm going on both of them, guys. I wouldn't miss this one for the world. So, Daniel Hurst of M&D Paranormal, tell us a little bit about what it's like to go on a ghost hunt with you.
Well, excuse me. The first thing we do is we go through all of the setup of the equipment. And we bring with us quite a bit of equipment. We bring DVR setups, you know, the static cameras that are always on. We have an SLS camera. And for those that don't know, that's if you watch the ghost shows on TV, that's the stick figure camera. It maps 3D images. And I've been using some software with it that just shows depth perception. I've actually gotten some interesting anomalies on that that I'm still testing. We have a lot of handheld equipment. And what I like to do when I take groups of people that aren't as experienced as I am or that's not my group, we will kind of bunch off into smaller groups and kind of stations. Some people will be doing an EVP session or a ghost box session. There's always somebody watching the DVR camera because you never know what's happening. So you have to have eyes everywhere. And, you know, we go through it. It's a really cool process, and I like to take people out because it's not what you see on TV. It really isn't. It takes a lot more work than what you actually see on TV. But I've also, through these excursions that I've had with other people, have noticed that the more people that are there, the better responses we get. You know, ghost hunting's kind of like fishing. You throw your line out and you wait, and you hope something bites. The more people are there, and the more people have that positive energy that are, you know, throwing out there into the atmosphere, I guess you could say, the more likely you are to have something happen. And that's been proven several times with me and my group. There's a place here in Marion, North Carolina, that we take groups of people. We do ticketed investigations in there, and we've never been disappointed, although I think the spirit that there is a showman. And I say that because of one of my own personal experiences with him. Let's say that he resides in a boulder room, and I was setting up the SLS camera specifically for the boulder room. And we had investigated previously, and we had gotten a name over the spirit box of Luke, so that's what we started calling him. And I put my head in the boulder room, and I said, Luke, we've got guests coming tonight, and I would really appreciate it if you would put on a show. And as soon as I finished that sentence, John, I kid you not, as soon as I finished that sentence, the breaker beside my head kicked, and every light in that basement went off. And I just kind of smiled and chuckled to myself, and I said, Luke, I appreciate it. Keep it up. We have taken groups of people in that building, and we really appreciate MACA for letting us do it. They're very open-minded, and it's a great energy for the place. And it's the Marion Arts Council. And we've taken several groups in there, and nobody has been disappointed. Everybody has had personal experiences that went there with us. It's just been phenomenal. And, you know, you can look at our Facebook page or our website – and see a lot of that evidence. I posted a lot of the good stuff. But it's been great. And I look forward to doing it every time. And we're getting ready to start a new location, too, here in Asheville.
Well, now, where's that? I mean, now, is that something you can tell us, or is that something that you're going to be taking groups to so you wouldn't want to let us know?
No, we recently investigated. It's a bar here in Asheville. It's called the Dueling Piano Bar. And the owner's name's Ben, a great guy. He's had some really interesting activity in there, and that whole block where this bar sits is active. Everything there is active. Everything is old. There's stories from back during the Prohibition era. And, you know, Asheville back in those days was pretty wild and pretty dangerous. And even this street that this bar is on is still original to those days. It's one of the few brick roads still left in Asheville. And we went in and we'd done an investigation not long ago. As a matter of fact, I'm still reviewing evidence. And on his DVR camera, one of the things that he's shown us is he has a very, very heavy door in the back. About 3 o'clock one morning when the bar was shut down, that door flung open on its own, just blew open. And we've gotten at least 3 so far really good EVPs. And all of this is going to be kind of public information, I guess. He's okay with sharing and talking about it. He's really into it. He's kind of an amateur ghost hunter himself, I believe. And
okay.
But really just a cool guy. And so we're working on some ideas. And, you know, I do, like at MACA, I do these ticketed events. And I usually take small groups, just like 10. And we're working on doing that there at his bar, too. So it's going to be real
okay.
Good.
All right, now I'm going to ask you a personal question. Since I am a
yes, sir.
Piano player, he has pianos there, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, good. Well, tell him when I come up and go there, hang out with you. I want to play piano for his patrons before we all go out.
Oh, he will be happy. He will be happy about that. It's a really cool place, really cool atmosphere. And like I said, it's a Dueling Piano Bar there in Asheville. Look it up. It's all over my website now. So, and I'm sure he would be happy to let you tickle those ivories.
Well, I would be glad to do it. So we'll talk about that in Engineer Trip to Asheville. Maybe Mr. Delph. Matt, how far is Asheville? How far is that trip for you from home?
Probably about maybe 2.5-3 hours. Not too far.
Well,
not far.
Well, if you get well, no, be nice. Yeah, Cherokee's pretty good. We're looking forward to the Cherokee Comic Con. I think M&D Paranormal is going to be with us. I think I asked them. If I didn't, this is your invitation, Daniel. Got so many things going on. Yeah, Cherokee Comic Con, August 24th, 25th, Cherokee, North Carolina. The Cherokee Legends Comic Con, Paranormal Comic-Con, Medieval, it's all going to be there. So if I didn't ask you, I'm asking you now, okay?
Oh, well, I appreciate that. That's actually my 40th birthday.
Well, three happy birthday. Well, if that's going to be your birthday, Matt, we'll get him a cake, won't we?
Yeah, definitely. You show up, we'll give you a cake.
We'll get you
a
cake.
That'd be awesome, you know.
Yeah,
oh, great news. Yeah. What is it, the 24th or the 25th, your birthday?
It's the 25th, and as you guys both know, I'm what you may call a man of stature, so I don't turn down cake.
Oh, okay. Well, I love cake. Yeah, we'll get into that later. But, no, that'll be great. We'll definitely have your birthday cake before because I would assume that you will need to do your activities on Saturday night because Matt will do his activities of going out in the woods on Sunday during the day. We don't want people to go out. Matt, we don't want people to go out in the woods at night with you because that can lead to some sprained, broken ankles, or worse, right?
Yeah, I'm really cautious on taking just the general public out to nighttime investigations. But later on, maybe what we might be able to do, I've been putting some thought into it, and maybe some experienced other people that have come out on some of these with me and stuff, maybe we could get a group together, you know, go out one evening. But for the most part, though, just for the general public, we try to keep it just during the day because a lot of people don't really know what to expect or what they're getting into, and especially in the woods at nighttime, it could be dangerous for certain people, you know, just accident-prone injuries, stuff like that.
Well, it could be dangerous for everyone if a mad bear comes up behind somebody. There's nothing you can do to stop that, is there?
No. I mean, for the most part, though, black bears are more scared of you than you are them, but there's cases where you do get one that's not too happy you're in his area, or the mama with the two little ones is the worst one to come across. So I usually keep my fair distance with the babies.
Well, that's a good idea. All right. Well, now, Daniel, the next question, and thanks for telling us a little bit about what you got. And by the way, during your talk, since I'm going to be there listening, will you tell just a little bit about the ghost box for me?
Yeah, that's no problem at all.
People are really intrigued with that, and that would be wonderful. Now, my next question for you, Daniel, is tell us about, pick two of your best ghost hunts and tell us what happened. Give us some details. If something funny happened, great. If something bad happened, well, let us know. But pick two and tell us a little bit about them.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll start off with a funny one. And it's a personal story. And again, we were doing an investigation at Macca in Marion. And we were in the basement, and we had our, I guess what you would call base, set up on the top floor. And my other two founding members, Mary and Tess, were both watching the DVR camera. I was in the basement alone doing an EVP session.
Now, that being in the basement alone can lead to problems, can't it?
I wouldn't recommend it for just anybody.
That's what I
have. I've had enough dealings and experiences and knowledge seeped into my thick head that I'm a little bit more comfortable doing that on my own. But I wouldn't recommend just anybody doing that. But anyway, I was doing this EVP session, and my ear started burning. And it just kept getting hotter and hotter. And I kept messing with it. I'm thinking, what is going on? Did I get, you know, spider bit or something? Other than that, you know, nothing was happening. I thought it was just a quiet time in the basement in the dark. Well, I decided.
Okay.
And I decided to end the EVP session. And I went upstairs, and as soon as I got up the stairs, and I turned and I looked at Mary and Tess, they both looked at me and started laughing. As I walked up, I was messing with my ear, and I said, well, my ear hurts. So they start laughing at me. I'm like, well, what is funny about that? And they said, well, we've been having K2 hits up here. And a K2 meter, you know, it reads electromagnetic field. And it's thought that when a spirit manifests, it creates an electromagnetic field. So sometimes, if you're lucky, you can get intelligent responses with a K2, almost like yes, no, you know, you ask yes, no questions and, you know, light it up twice for yes, once for no kind of thing. So that's what was happening. Well, we already know that at least one of the spirits that are there is a showman. So Mary and Tess are talking to this spirit that's talking to them, and they keep telling it to go pull my ear, so we can get my reaction. on video to see what would happen. And they said that every time, without fail, they'd say, go pull his ear again. And they'd watch me, and I'd touch my ear, and that K2 meter would go off almost like a laugh. So, you know, that's kind of a funny one that happened. I think one that's a little bit scarier, I'll go the other direction. One of our first investigations was actually an outdoor investigation. And Matthew, you may think that I caught something else, which is entirely possible during this, but I was outside, and we run a lot of equipment. The investigation that we done at the off the wagon, the dueling piano bar, I had 136 hours of evidence to review, if that tells you how much equipment that we run. Most particular time, I was sitting and watching DVR cameras. And we always have recorders, audio recorders everywhere, because you never know when you'll pick something up.
Right.
And I'm doing an EVP session while I'm watching these. And I had a bad feeling, just for no real reason. And so I'm continuing this session. And one of the reports was of a, like, 9 to 10 foot shadow that they saw outside. I got this really bad feeling. And I've learned, now, again, I don't recommend this for anybody, just anybody. You have to have a certain knowledge base and know how to protect yourself. But when I get these bad feelings, I tend to go into it, that situation. Because, you know, if somebody needs help, like a cleansing or anything like that, that's the situation you need to know about, is that negative. You want to get rid of that negative. So I own my space. And there's a lot more detail that goes into that, but I'll leave it at that. So I go further into this. Well, the feeling abated, but on evidence review, on the audio, I got this growl. It was half moan, half growl, half just horrible, horrible sound. And I didn't hear it, you know, in real time, which happens a lot. That's why that evidence review is so important. But it was just unlike anything I've heard before. And considering the location where we were and we were outside, I can't say that it may not have been a cryptid. It might have been, you know, Bigfoot out there telling me you need to go inside. Or it could have been something worse. I don't know. But I think that's one of the scarier ones that we've had on an actual investigation. Personal experiences, I could go a lot worse. But investigation-wise, I think it's one of our scarier ones. We've had a lot of good times on investigations, luckily. Knock on wood.
Yeah. Well, now, Matt, what do you think about that?
I was going to say, is there, like, wooded area close? I mean, waterway? What's the layout of the area?
It was in the middle of nowhere. It was set back in kind of a cul-de-sac, surrounded by woods. There was a couple streams. I mean, all of the markers for cryptid activity were there. It could have possibly been a lot of different things. And the people that we were investigating for were kind of up a hill, and they had a little bonfire going, you know, and I was back in the shadows. And there was woods all around. Once in a while, they had a dog in the back that would just go absolutely berserk. But, you know, they do that with both cryptid and paranormal stuff.
But yeah, that's a good possibility. Did you notice any different smells or anything in the air or anything like that?
No, nothing real prominent. Nothing that really stuck out. But again, looking back, you know, excuse me. Looking back, it could have been a lot of different things.
Right. That's pretty interesting. I'd like to know, you ought to look up and check and see if there's been any Bigfoot activity or sightings in that area.
Yeah. Well, I know that there has, actually. Not like on that spot, but close enough. And, of course, you know, that's in retrospect, because when we were doing it, we weren't thinking that way. And we were more worried about getting our equipment set up right and everything. We've come a long way since then.
Yeah, that's exactly. You get these experiences, and it just makes you even better, makes you more aware.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, Matt, I don't know if I told you the last time we spoke or not, but it's a running joke with the people that I run around with if I ever do run into Bigfoot. Because, you know, I go out looking for Bigfoot, too. I'm the only one on my team that's really into cryptid stuff. But I go out with a buddy of mine, runs Asheville Cryptid Society. And it's a running joke that if we ever do get definitive proof, that definitive proof is going to consist of me seeing Bigfoot and probably trying to walk up and either pet him or shake his hand and wind up getting thrown across the woods. And everybody that knows me is like, yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. So y'all look for that on the news.
All righty. Or you may not see a person report.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
Yeah, Daniel, we don't want to go into that, especially at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, but just, you know, be careful, have a good time. Those are some great stories. They really are. I can tell you, my family is, I don't know if I really told you this or not, but my family is from Glenalpine, North Carolina, or as we call it up there, Glenalpine. So now you know I'm really from there. And I had a number of my relatives live in Marion, and I've been up to Lake Marion. That is the creepiest place I have ever been. Have you ever done any exploration out on the shores of Lake Marion?
I have been out around Lake James, Lake Tahoma, and another lake.
You're right. Lake Tahoma. That's Lake. I'm sorry. Lake Tahoma is the one I'm talking about. I'm sorry. There's a golf course on Lake Marion. That's Marion Lake Country Club out there at that lake. I'm sorry. You're right. Lake Tahoma. That is the creepiest place. Do they still have that pavilion out in the middle of it?
Yes, they do. Yes,
oh my God! That looks like something out of Carnival of Souls. That really does. Can you still walk out on that pavilion?
No, you can't get in there. It's you know, all that property around Lake Tahoma and Lake Tahoma itself is privately owned, and they had it really locked down. You have to go past it, and you have to know how far past it you can go before you can actually get out and hike back into the woods, because it's surrounded by national forest. But that area there is privately owned, and they really watch people. You can't mess around up there.
Now, was that privately – was Lake Tahoma, did they buy that land around an existing lake, or was that – or was Tahoma built by Duke Power?
You know, I honestly don't know. I've not looked into their history a lot. I've had a few people tell me some things about it. I know that it was privately owned as far back as the early 1900s.
Yeah, because, I mean, with the name Tahoma, I mean, that's the Tahoma Indian tribe up there. And I was just wondering what some of the history was. Do you, out of curiosity, do you know how I could find the people that own that property? Because I would like to talk with them.
I can find out. I don't know right offhand, but I can definitely find out and let you know.
Find out, please, because I've always wanted to do something up there. We used to go up there when I was a kid. And, Matthew, these are just remembrances of Dr. John being a kid. And we used to go to the Lake Tahoma Steakhouse and eat, and it was a lot of fun. But it was creepy as all get out. And my parents took me out. We walked out on that pavilion. And I got the weirdest vibe of the creeps. I mean, I was shaking. There's something out there. My mother said that they used to be able to go out there and have parties back when she used to go up there in, you know, the 40s and the early 50s. She had friends up there because she lived, you know, what, 15 miles from there. And I think back then the property was owned by the man that, that owned the huge knitting mill up there in Marion. But, you know, I'd like to check that out and see if we could rekindle a relationship, because that was about the creepiest I ever felt, was walking out on that pavilion. I mean, it might not even be safe right now because that pavilion was, it was old when we went out there in the 60s. So, I mean, just, you know, whatever. But, yeah, just check that out and let me know when you have a chance. I think it would be an interesting relationship to build to see what's up there, because I – Do you guys get the feeling that there are some spirits around Lake Tahoma? I know I did.
I've been on land around Tahoma that I'm completely convinced it was sacred land, to the point where the second time I went back, I brought an offering with me.
Okay, well, then my inclination when I was a four-year-old kid was not too far off. I guess that's why I'm in this business now. Well, that's great. You know, first of all, it's been good talking. I mean, you know, I want you to stay around here because we got to talk to Matt. But it's been good to talk to you about, you know, some of the fun things and some of the interesting things about doing investigations with people. I think it's important as people judge whether or not they want to go out and do this. I mean, it's just fun. So anyway, but thanks for those stories. Stick around now because our buddy Matt Delf, my co-host, but today he's a guest. So Matt Delf is going to tell us what to expect when you go out Bigfoot hunting with him on Sunday at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. Matt, it's all yours.
All right. Well, I hope both of you guys will join me Sunday, if possible. But what I like to do with the public people like that, pretty much, since during the day, you know, I kind of let them know, you know, what to expect. You got to have, you know, if you've got real bad heart condition, any type of health issues, you know, I try and discourage you from doing any of the hiking, stuff like that. But for the most part, I'll take people out and just educate them, pretty much. Because most of the time, getting a Bigfoot sighting is so rare. You know, if you go out and that's what you're expecting to see, then you're going to be disappointed. But what I can promise is, you know, I'm gonna show you what to look for, and, you know, in hopes that we will have an encounter. But basically, I'm just going to educate you on what to look for, different signs you can have fun, educate you pretty much just on the wilderness. That's the big key to all this, is going out, and you got to know your wildlife and your surroundings. The Georgia one's going to be interesting for me because I have not yet been up there, and I'm going to be just as excited as everyone else going out in that area, you know. It's going to be great, but I like to teach people, you know, what to look for, the signs, to have a good time, kind of show them, you know, what to look for in tracks, where to help identify track. Because everybody knows I'm a tracker. I can usually get on a fairly decent, fresh track, and I can track whatever it is, usually right to it. Do some other stuff, like since it's going to be during the day, we'll still probably all let some of them try some wood knocks. Basically, maybe do some calls. I usually do a different approach when I'm out there. I usually do like a stalk hunt whenever I'm out in the field investigating. I kind of use my sixth sense, and I'm the predator and it's the prey, pretty much, to try and get within, you know, pretty close distance to it. But if there's one around, it's going to come around because it's going to be curious to what we're doing. They're not scared of us like everybody thinks. They're definitely not that scared that a lot of people think. Oh, you know, they're run and hide. They do it for their protection. They stay hidden for their protection, but they're curious. They will they'll be around. If there's any in that area right then at that time, then they'll definitely come find us. They'll know that we're around.
You know, Matt, I think they're more scared of what we might do to the woods than being scared of us, don't you?
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I think they like to observe and watch us. So like he was talking about with his bonfire and stuff, you know, I'm sure if there's one in that area, it came to check out what's going on here, what they doing, you know. But, yeah, I like to take, you know, since during the day, you know, you got to be, depending on the weather, you got to bring plenty of water. You know, you got to keep fluids in you. Basically, just your whole hiking condition. When we go out, though, I mean, you know, try and educate everyone on the surroundings, your different, you know, your different types of animals in the area. Got to be cautious because snakes, stuff like that. And I'd say they're probably starting to come out about right now. But it's always fun.
Yeah.
It's a great time being out in the woods. It doesn't matter what type of mood you're in. You go out into the woods and you forget all your worries, all your cares. It's a great time, but it'll be definitely a educational experience for a lot of people if they don't get out in the woods. Very educational. It'll help them also, you know, for if they want to do it on their own, then they're going to kind of get an idea of what to look for, you know, what to do, certain scenarios, and so forth.
Well, definitely I'm ready to get educated with you out there in the out there in the woods. I think it's going to be just a lot of fun. So tell us about a couple of more interesting Bigfoot expeditions that you've run.
Well, there's this one incident that it was just about, it was getting dark, and there was, we've had reports of Bigfoot mimicking owls. So we're doing barred owl calls. Well, at the time of this expedition, we're hearing acorns drop because acorns are dropping at that time. But then it sounds like rocks. There's this lady, she's like, there's rocks falling over here. She goes, that's not acorns. We're like, it's acorns. She's like, no, there's rocks coming over this way. And we do another barred owl call, and we get a response back. But then there was three real loud knocks right after the owl call. So I'm getting excited. I'm like, wow, you know, there's three calls. They're kind of getting scared, but they keep calling in the – they keep calling, and we didn't respond back with the wood knock. So that – where that response was coming from kept getting farther away. And then whatever it was, it stirred up a bunch of coyotes, and these coyotes are going off like crazy. A lot of people say that coyotes run with Bigfoot. I didn't believe it. Always thought, that's kind of crazy. But then I got – the longer I've been in it now, the more I've researched, the more I know, 20 years worth of knowledge. And I'd seen where baboons would steal coyote pups and feral dog puppies out of dens, and they would make them their pets. And I actually posted a video up on it on my page or group, Macro. And they were living with raising these coyote pups and dogs like they were their pets. They were even sleeping with them and everything. So if a baboon can do that, it's definitely a good possibility, you know, Bigfoot could do that easily. Easily. And... well, that night, it was pretty wild because we were calling that call, it brought a barred owl right up on us. And, I mean, it made me jump because I didn't even hear it come in. And it was right above my head. And it lets up this big owl call. It's, whoa! And, I mean, talk about me hitting the ground. I was like, whoa, you know. And this is during, of course, you know, the nighttime, evening into the nighttime. That was a pretty crazy experience there. There was one time we went out, and these are mostly night investigations that we get, you know, a lot of crazy activity. Plus, your imagination kind of goes a little bit wild when you can't see out in front of you. But we were going through the woods there this one time, and we hear this scream, and I still to this day can't identify it. I was trying to record it, but it was circling us. Scream. I mean, it was within feet. I'm trying to shine the light, trying to see what it is, but it's moving too quick. I can't see it. The other guy that was with me, he's freaking out. He starts walking a little bit close to this edge of this bushes, and it lets out that scream, and a stick snaps where it had been, whatever it was standing there. And he was ready to get out of there. He's like, let's go, let's get. Of course, me, I'm trying to go towards the noise. He's trying to run away from it. It was chaos. But we've had a lot of the nighttime like that. You hear all these crazy noise. And forest, this one time, the forest completely dead. And didn't hear nothing all night long. And I let out this call, this scream call. And it's like the woods come alive. Stuff, you could hear stuff running around us. Kind of freaky, you know. Especially when you couldn't even see, hear nothing. And then all of a sudden you let out this scream, this call, and the woods just comes alive. You can hear stuff running around. I imagine there was coyotes in the area, but you never know, you know. You can't really tell because it's dark. You don't see it, so I'm not going to say it's Bigfoot, but more likely it's probably coyotes. But we didn't hear them come in. That was kind of the scary thing, especially when you're sitting there at night. Now, when we go on the day investigations, of course, you know, we don't got a night vision camcorder that I can use for the night. But for the daytime, you know, pretty much like equipment-wise stuff, we just basic stuff like, you know, you might have something to record sounds with or video, but most part, you know, we don't need any night vision or any of that stuff.
So you don't have a FLIR camera or anything like the She-Squatchers do?
No, I don't have the FLIR camera, no. The one I want is about $9,000, and I'm hoping that I'll get something pretty similar to it pretty soon. But I do have the night vision camcorder. So,
okay,
that there, I mean, that helps a lot. It catches a lot. But I don't have the FLIR. But the one I want, because, okay, FLIRs, you're paying a high price for something you can only see within so many feet in front of you. And it's not very good. A lot of times it's got to be cold out for it to even work. Your good stuff is very high priced. Very high priced. That's why a lot of these researchers, everybody's like, where's this and that? Unless you've got somebody paying you thousands of dollars for this equipment, the general person just in general isn't going to have it. You know, you're going to have somebody that's well off to help you out with this equipment, because the working man, you know, who's got $10,000 to $15,000 just spend on a camera for night vision, you know? I know I don't. I'm hoping, not for a camera anyhow, you know, but I'm hoping to get something very similar. I'm going to have to pay a high price for it, I know, but that will, I should have that, I'm hoping by the end of summer. I'm hoping to have it by the end of summer.
Okay.
Unless you want to buy it for me, I'll take it.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. Somebody asked me one time, are there any conference funds to do so-and-so and so-and-so? And I thought, no, not really, not yet. But we'll see. We'll do it again. Well, but yeah, so, you know, going out with you is obviously a lot of fun. And now, would you share with us how things went You were at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and on the Sunday of the conference, you and two of the She-Squatchers, Jenna and Tammy, went out in the woods with a group of people. Can you share with us kind of how did that go, and what did you find or not find?
That day it was super cold, super cold. It was a really cold day. We'd went out there. We'd found a couple tree structures. It looked like an X in the woods. We'd found actually an area that I knew that we'd went up to, and it had a tree that had been it. For some reason, something had tore into this tree, and it's up high. And where this branch was pulled out from it, it was pulled up. It had actually been pulled up, and you had to be pretty tall to grab this branch and pull it straight up because the bark was pulled up from where the tree branch was torn off of it. And we found hair samples. We got the hair samples off of it, and I believe you have them. And it was stuck in whatever it was wanting. It was in that tree, whatever it was using it, I don't know. But the sap had collected some of the hair. That was pretty interesting, showing them, you know, hey, and showing them how the tree was broke, how you can tell if it's something else.
Uh-oh, what was that? Did we do something wrong?
No, that was a alarm on my phone there. So,
oh, I thought it was I thought Bigfoot set off an alarm there, yeah.
But that the whole tree there, that area that I took them up to was a Bigfoot sanctuary. There have been multiple sightings up in that area. You're not allowed to shoot or kill them. It was just so cold that day, but we still had fun hiking in there. And one thing that I did notice, though, was there was no wildlife at all. Didn't hear birds, nothing. The complete wilderness was quiet that day. And that's what prompted us to go back for the night investigation with me and the She-Squatchers. And,
right,
you know, they do the remote viewing, and right where we picked out that day expedition is where Jen had, she didn't go with us during the day. It was Tammy and Jenna. But
right, actually Jen was, if I remember correctly, she was with me up at the Farmstead Museum at Bays Mountain Park, and I was doing the Bigfoot and Lizard Man roundtable. So we were busy doing that, and because she had just elected not to go out earlier in the day. But yeah, and I tell you what, I'm going to just give everybody a quick primer on remote viewing. Daniel, you know a little bit. I'm sure you know a lot about this. So basically, remote viewing is when someone that has some psychic abilities will close their eyes and try to look at a particular area and see what they see. It is no more than that. But some people are quite successful in doing that. Daniel, have you ever worked with any remote viewers in any of your investigations?
I have not, but I did have the pleasure of meeting Dr. John Alexander, if you know who he is. They consider him the godfather of remote viewing. He's the guy that, you know, the movie The Men That Stare at Goats, that's who he was modeled, or who that movie was modeled after. He talked.
Okay.
I got to watch him talk about some telekinesis and remote viewing and all of those military applications that they were trying back in the day. Quite interesting.
Right. Now, where were you? Was that at a seminar, or were you able to, like, meet him in person?
I met him in person. I was helping Joshua P. Warren at a event in Las Vegas at the beginning of the year, and he was a speaker there, and I actually had the pleasure of meeting him face-to-face, being able to shake his hand.
Wow. That's impressive. And, yeah. All right, so that's a little bit, would you say my explanation was reasonable for Matt to continue his story so that people really understand what remote viewing is? Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's completely adequate.
Okay. All right, Matt, please continue. So Jen Cruz, who is able to do remote viewing, she ascertained there were certain hot spots that night, correct?
Yes, and it was there right in that area that we had been during the day. And what was pretty interesting was she'd seen it, and she's like, right here, and right here, that she had seen them. And so we go up there, and we're up there, and as soon as I get out of the car in that area, I feel, I've got like a, I can tell, it's like he was talking earlier, that you get this feeling. I got a kind of like a sixth sense. I can tell when there's something not right, something present. There's more to it than, you know, what you're seeing.
Yep.
It's an energy force. You can feel the energy. And I'm not crazy or anything. And I'm actually been labeled, you know, in the Bigfoot community. They always say he's not one of the crazy ones. But to those you try to use science to dictate, you know, everything.
But now, Matt, I've known you long enough to know you are crazy, but continue, okay?
But in a different way. In a different way than what they
Okay, all right. Daniel, I've known him too long. He is crazy. But then I am too. That's why we get along. All right, Matt, keep going on. Sorry, just a nice bad joke in the middle of your story. Okay, please continue.
I got out of the car. As soon as I got out to that area, I could feel an energy. Something was, you know, you could feel this energy presence. And I tell them, I said, I've got a strong feeling about this. And they're like, well, Jen, she was with us this time. It's me and Jenna and Tammy. And Tammy's got the FLIR, and she's looking around in the area where Jen had remote viewed, where she said that she'd seen one. Well, on her hair comes up white on the FLIR camera. And Tammy starts, she's kind of like, she's like, check this out. You know, she's getting all excited. You could tell, you know, she's got something on the FLIR.
She's about as perceptive and psychic as anyone I've ever met, Tammy, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here she is. She's going on. She's like, look at this over here. I've got something. And it's actually up on their webpage. They got the FLIR from the. You can see something white. It's covering hair, and it seems to be moving. And at times it looks like a head and shoulders right in that area. And we sit there and recorded it and viewed it there for a while. And then later on after that night, I went back to that same area to look to see, you know, what it was. And it's kind of interesting because right where we were at and we had the FLIR focused on, it's a drop-off. So there's a very good possibility that it was standing straight up right there at that area, whatever it was. So it could have been from a torso up. Because it's a huge drop, it's like a drop, and there's a rock ledges as it goes down. So it could have been something. I'm going to film and match up and show the difference between where we had the FLIR footage with the footage during the daytime of what is actually there, and you'll see that that white object is not there, you know, that we had actually picked up something. I don't know what it was. You know, I always have to be 100% sure that, you know, it's a Bigfoot before I say it's a Bigfoot, but it was something. That's all I can say is it was something was there that was causing that to be brought to her attention and the movement, everything and so forth. But that area is very highly active. But the time that we went, a lot of your wildlife during the cold spells like that, with the snow and stuff, they'll move down to the valleys to get out of the wind, to get, you know, the warmer areas for food. So it just so happened during the day, we didn't get no activity that day. But I believe something was curious why we were up there, what was going on, and that's what brought it out during the night for us to, when we went back that night. Now, when we go in Georgia, the thing about it is at the end of April, more than likely it's going to be fairly warm, plus it's farther south. So that's a good thing that we're not going to have to worry about wildlife moving down. I'm thinking about getting some, letting people, if we can find some tracks, do a, if they want to do a cast of some track, then, you know, let them have their shot at trying to make a plaster cast of any type of tracks that we find. I think they'll enjoy.
Are you going to have the plaster and you just get the water from a creek? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, or take a little bottle of water and mix it up and let them. Whenever I do my research, my personal research, I don't ever take evidence. Like, I don't ever make plaster casts. But I figure a lot of people would enjoy doing that. Myself, I know it exists, so I don't need the evidence. I'm wanting to come eye to eye with it. But for the people, and just to let them, you know, if they want to do that, you know, because everybody's got their different reasons for doing it. Mine's just more personal. Mine's just more personal, you know, because my encounter, I mean, it shook me for the rest of my life, you know. So it's more personal for me. So I want to find, if I find its trail, I'm coming all the way to its front door. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to stop and take cast of its tracks and so on. I'm going right to its front door. I may not come back, but I'm going, you know, I got to face that fear that I had encountered all those years ago. I want to look it in its face and maybe try and get more of an explanation of actually, you know, what it is and what it was that scared me so bad. But whenever I take people out with me like that, then I want them to enjoy, you know, just the whole Bigfoot activity. You know, practicing wood knocks or calls, and let them experience, you know, what to do if they want to collect evidence, if they're evidence collectors, you know, how to collect the evidence, the hair samples, the tracks, the cast, so forth. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds great. And I mean, you know, it's great. It's really neat that you could use Jen's reviewing skills for that. And all. So I guess what I'll do is you've answered my questions. I would like to open it up, and I'd like to say, Daniel, do you have anything you'd like to say about M&D Paranormal, what you guys do, what you've done in the past, what you intend to do in the future, anything that you want to do about that? And then, Matt, I'm going to give you some time to talk about MECRO, your organization, the Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, which is available on Facebook. So, Daniel, to you first, my friend.
Well, excuse me. Our big goal at M&D, as much as we want to get definitive proof of paranormal, we want to work to dispel a stigma that is still surrounding the paranormal. And I use paranormal as an umbrella term. For me, it's, you know, it's ghosts, it's Bigfoot, it's the fae folk, it's, you know, what have you. It's that stigma. And it's also why we do our monthly gatherings. We want to give people a safe place to go to and say, look, I had this, I don't know what happened, but I need to talk about it. Because, you know, I have a long background in psych. And just like Matt was saying, you know, his first experience with Bigfoot, it startled him. And I've had experiences that would give some people PTSD. I'm fortunate in the fact that it made me want to learn more about it, but I know people that have been terrified of it, and we want to help the community. And if we've had you know, if we have somebody come to us, and this has happened, we've done a lot of investigations we can't talk about, unfortunately, that were great. But we want to help. If we have somebody come to us and say, I have, you know, this activity happening, it scares me, I don't want it, I don't understand it, or, you know, things like that, that's why we're doing what we're doing. You know, hopefully one day we'll get definitive proof. Maybe not. But, you know, what proof we do have, you can see on our website at mndparanormal.com. You can find us on Facebook. I have a new YouTube channel that I just started. It's MND Paranormal. And MND Paranormal at blogspot.com. So I plan on talking a lot about, you know, what we're doing.
Okay. Well, that's great. And I hope everybody will go enjoy that and send you, if they go to your website, they can contact you, they can talk to you and all that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, contact us anytime. The phone number is 460-9028. That goes directly to my phone, and that's an 828 area code. We love to hear
stories. Oh, you're starting, without giving that area code, you're starting to sound local like I do. That's great.
Yeah.
Because I love your area. I grew up there. I can't say enough great things about it. And, of course, we'll have to do some investigation about Lake Tahoma, see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
I think that's a great scary place. I've got an area in Lake James called Sherman's Hollow, which we always knew was haunted. I don't know. Are you familiar with Sherman's Hollow?
That sounds really familiar.
If you're not, I'll take you there. We'll get on a boat, and I'll take you there. And we'll do it at sundown. See if you don't think it's creepy. We were always my family and our friends, the Gibbs that used to go with us all the time. We were always too afraid to stay there. It was just too creepy. So anyway, there's some good places in and around there. And of course, looking forward to having you guys and Matt at the Cherokee Legends Comic Con, August the 24th and 25th. That's going to be a blast as we do some paranormal investigation, both Friday night, Saturday night, and all day Sunday. So it's going to be good mentioning that because you're up there. And thanks. Now, Matt, what do you have to say to everybody about Micro, what you're doing, where you're going, and everything? And no jokes about me this time. Okay, Matt?
I'll try and refrain.
Thank you.
But
appreciate it.
Mountain Empire Crypto Research Organization. Everybody knows I run that page. You can find us on Facebook at Macro for Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization. What I like to do is I'm more now, before, I mean, the whole search, everything is personal for me, but I enjoy, like, these conferences, stuff like that, is hearing people's stories because they feel relief, and it's just not, you know, these people that come in and tell their stories and stuff are their pharmacists or lawyers. Well, I don't know if we want to consider a lawyer an honest person, but
I've got good friends that are lawyers from Kingsport, Tennessee, told me their story. I've talked with them. They're great people. I'm a stick up for them.
Okay. But for the most part, you know, you've got different types of people that whether they are way up here, well-educated people that have had experiences, and they won't tell people because of the fear of ridicule.
Exactly.
And I love these conferences because they feel like they can, it lets them have this burden lifted when they tell about it and not in the fear of being ridiculed. And a lot of people come up and they'll tell me their story. And with Mountain Empire Crypto Research Organization, I like to now I'm wanting to start showing more evidence. Before, I didn't really gather evidence because I knew it exists. I seen it. My whole personal hunt was, you know, I know that if you present this out to the world, this evidence, people are always going to say, no, that's not real, it's not this, it's not that. Or if it is, then the government's going to shut it down real quick. So I know that it's not going to be, you're not going to bring it out to the whole world to see. It's going to be shut down real quick. And I've accepted that fact. I know that's never going to happen. But what I do like to do is I like to show evidence of what's out there, what we do come across now. My personal goal is to come face-to-face with one again. But he was talking about the post, you know, the trauma that it gives you after experience like that. And that's what encouraged me to go after this, because I've never been scared of nothing before. And I'm well-educated in wildlife and being outdoors. I grew up, my dad used to run a trap farm, and I used to go out when I was 4 years old. So basically from the time I could walk till now, I've been nothing but outdoors. I know the woods very well, the wildlife very well, and I'm still learning. But I'm pretty close. You can put me in any type of environment, and, you know, I can identify whatever, and my knowledge is just, my IQ on the woods is super high. And the whole, you know, whenever I take these people out now, I'm wanting to try and share some of that knowledge. Community, you know, a lot of people put all these pictures up and stuff, and a lot of it's just, it kind of drives me nuts because, you know, some of it's crazy, some of it, you know, it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but I try and give everybody, you know, a scientific approach, but there's more to it now that I've been in it longer than just science can explain. But I want everybody to, if you're going out and you're really into it, you got to keep an open mind. But you need to know your wilderness. You need to know what this or that is, because a lot of people will say, okay, I've had people bring tracks up to me, and you know, they're like, look, there's a big cat, you know, outside my house. I'm like, no, that's not a cat track. Cats don't have their nails out, you know, during the, if they're just walking. You know, there's a lot of things like that I like to educate people on. And it'll help you, too. You can identify stuff. Like I said, I've got people sending me different sounds they've recorded, wanting me to identify it, and, you know, I'll tell them what it is. And it's a lot of you, just your common animals, that people didn't know that they would make that type of noise. But as far as Mountain Empire, you know, I like to share what we find, but I'm not going to steer you wrong. I'm not going to put a picture of a bunch of woods out there and draw a bunch of circles around and see if you can find this Bigfoot or whatever in it. I'm not going to do nothing like that. If it's on there, I know 100%, you know, what it is usually. If I don't know, then I'll say I don't know what this is. This could be anything, you know. You're never going to get a bunch of lies or hoaxes or anything from Mountain Empire. It's strictly, it is what it is. You know, it's straightforward. It's pretty much, it's like, okay, this is what I've seen. You know, you can take it for whatever you want, but this is it. This is, you know, the truth. I'm not going to try and. Anybody that hoaxes anything like that, a lot of people do a lot of stuff just get attention. That's not us. That's not me or anybody I work with. And the conferences is awesome. I love it. All types of people there, and that one, I love hearing their stories, you know, and their sightings and stuff like that. It's really, really good community, going to these things and talking to these people at these conferences. That's my favorite part, is just dealing with the public when they open up and they get this relief, this stress, you know, off their shoulders.
We had plenty of that type of good experience happening at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, and you know good and well it's going to be happening at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference here on April the 27th. It's going to be, and on the 26th during the VIP sessions. Oh, yeah, and so I guess I'll remind both of you, Georgia Bigfoot Conference coming up April the 26th, 27th, and 28th, April 26th, VIP session, flat out sold out, 50 people. coming in to talk. Have a great time. We've got a couple extra vendors that are going to show up, and some really neat things happening Friday night from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday from 10 until 6. Change the times just a little bit. We let it run a little, start a little later because so many people coming from Atlanta that might not want to get a hotel room. So we're going to, instead of starting at 9 o'clock, we're going to start 10 a.m. Eastern and run until 6 p.m. Just a little shift there to try to help the preponderance of people coming from the great metro area of Atlanta. And then on Sunday, on Saturday night, we're going to have a ghost hunt. Daniel, is it okay to call it a ghost hunt? You can tell
yeah,
I'm old school. It's a ghost hunt. Yeah, so ghost hunt on Friday, on Saturday night with Daniel Hurst and M&D Paranormal, and we're going to have a grand time. Matt, you going to be able to go with us?
Well, I'm sure I probably will.
Well, you better. You better. I might get scared. I might need someone to catch me if I start running, so you better. And then Sunday we got the Bigfoot Exploration with Matthew Delf and breakfast at the Raven County Library. So we've got that going on. And then I want to announce on June 1st, Lizard Man Festival, South Carolina Lizard Man. Matt, you're going to be there, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be speaking, aren't I?
I hope. I'll be speaking, and we've got very special guests we're going to be announcing here very soon. Some brand new guests coming to the Lizard Man Festival. And one other thing I did want to announce, and I think this is very important. This is one of the first U.S. on Saturday, at 1 o'clock p.m., Dr. Igor Burtsev from Russia is going to be doing a Skype lecture to us. Dr. Burtsev is the leading Bigfoot researcher in Russia. Thank you to his great friend, who's a former guest on Bigfoot and Company, Robin McCrae. What a nice lady. She has set this all up so that Dr. Igor Burtsev will be here talking to us. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be exciting. One of his rare, rare U.S. appearances. So everybody's in for a treat there. Daniel, I hope you'll enjoy it too. So, yeah, it's going to be a blast. And I wonder if there's... Pardon?
He's been on a lot of TV shows on Discovery and Travel Channel and stuff. Igor, very well known.
Yeah, but you see, he's coming to our conference by Skype, and people can ask him questions. So, I mean, this is for real. This is for real. This is as one-on-one as you can get with a dude in Russia. So,
exactly.
You know, we aim to please. So, I want to say thank you so much to our guest, Daniel Hurst with M&D Paranormal. Daniel, the website is, what is the website?
It's mndparanormal.com or mndparanormal@blogspot.com.
All righty. That is great. So we're looking forward to having you there. Wish you much continued success with M&D Paranormal. Matthew Delf, you now return. You are no longer a guest. You're now a co-host again, okay?
Daniel, we wish you
great success with Micro. Look forward to having you back next week. I think we'll be announcing here in a day or two. You might have a very special guest for us next week. So everybody, check that out on the website, which is bigfootandcompany.com. Also, check out the Bigfoot column. I write that. That appears in the Gray Area News up in Raleigh. Such wonderful people. We love them, and thanks for carrying the Bigfoot.
Go to the YouTube page also, Bigfoot and Company, and like it and subscribe. And
oh, thank you.
Thank you.
And our YouTube webmaster, Mark Johnston, thank you. You're the best from up there in Canada, and just such a great guy. He's been so helpful to us. Big shout-out to Mark Johnston. So, Mark, keep up the great work. We really appreciate you. We appreciate our friends, the She Squatchers, that give us constant counsel and guidance because they're out there. Just want to thank everybody that we're associated with. Robin McCrae, Bigfoot Explorer herself, and just thank everybody. And I hope you enjoyed this edition, actually, of Bigfoot and Company. We'll be back next week, Monday at 4 p.m. Daniel, anything else?
No, not right off the top of my head. Matt, when I see you, I have a story to tell you and ask your opinion on.
All right, great. I'll look forward to it, definitely.
Don't let me forget.
Well, I won't let you forget. I'll write that down, okay? So anyway,
okay.
And Matt, you got anything else to say?
Just I'm excited about the Georgia Conference, the expedition, a lot of sightings in that area, so I'm looking forward to a lot of great stories coming from there, too.
And I'll say watch carefully as you walk out into the dark. Make sure that you don't run into an 8-foot-tall hairy guy or girl. And they may be surprised if you walk into it. So be careful. Have a great week. And we'll see you next week, next Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, United States Time. Because we have a podcast in Australia, so I can now say that. And, of course, one on the West Coast, too, Scarycast, on Thursday night, 11 p.m. Devin Tate, Papa Stroh, and all kinds of crazy guests. So it's a lot of fun. We'll see you next week on Bigfoot and Company. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Goodbye.
Bye.